We're back in our study of Parsha Toldot. We had a very intense shiur last shiur, discussing deep and important layers of Emet and Sheker, of the realities of Edom and Esav, and we're going to take it one stage deeper, one layer deeper today. I'm a little bit under the weather, starting to get to that like hallucinating phase. So I hope that I'll be able to give it over clearly. I hope that I'll have a filter, because it's always bad to not have a filter when the recorder's on. We're also talking about some very strong challenges of the modern day and age. So hopefully we'll have the clarity to give it over as it should be. Let's recap what we talked about last time, relatively quickly, but I do want to hit on the major beats of what we spoke about last time as well, because the inyanim really draw from one to the other. Last year we talked about the depth of the nature of the final selection, the final stage of the selection in Sefer Bereishit, which is the selection between Esav and Yaakov. And what emerged, like we just said, at its core was, is that Yaakov is the embodiment of Emet, of truth, and Esav is the embodiment of Shechem. And we saw that already from Vayigdalu HaNe'arim, Vayhi Esav Yodea Tzayid, Yishtadeh Mashu Kazeh, that he was a Yodea Tzayid, that Rashi from Chazal brings down, that he was Latsut Defiv, he was able to trick with his mouth, that he was one way inside, and he was one another way from the mouth outwardly, that he would try to trick people, he was able to trick people to make them think he was something that he wasn't, as opposed to the Yaakov, Ishtam, Yoshevo Halim, that Yaakov is the Ishtam in one level of that Tzmimut, that very loaded and beautiful and complex word in its simplicity, which is one of the layers of the meaning of the word Tamim, and Tam means simple, but there's a lot of complexity to what simplicity is, a lot of depth to what simplicity is. And that one layer is that Kilibo came to Fiv, that he was one person inside and out. And that we brought out was the primary, one of the primary layers of uniqueness between the two. One of the core of the nature of that final selection was to take two things, two beings, two individuals who looked totally the same on the outside, two twins from the same womb who looked the same way, who act the same way, but they could not be more opposite. One being the embodiment of Emet, and one being the embodiment of Sheker. And we discussed the fact that the Sheker that we're talking about here is the worst type of Sheker that there is. That we've seen in the past issues of ta'ava, issues of reshut. But here we have somebody, we have an individual in Esav, who is Ra, Esav HaRasha, he's a Rasha. And yet, it's not just that he's a Rasha, not just that he's Ra, it's that he presents himself as being the Tzaddik. The Sheker, the depth of the Sheker of Esav is that he presents himself as the Tzaddik. And that's the struggle between Yaakov and Esav within the context of the final selection. And that becomes a paradigm. I'm just starting. We're recapping. That becomes the paradigm for our struggle nationally over history in the final selection process as well. As we've talked about many times in previous Shirim, that there are four stages of exile that Klal Yisrael go through. Bavel, Prasumadai, Yavan, and then finally the last stage, the final Galut, the final Malchut is... it's Edom. And part of the nature then of that struggle with Edom is going to be the struggle of Emet versus Sheker. That struggle of the Emet of Klal Yisrael to stand up to the Sheker of Esav. But the Sheker of Esav, the Sheker of Edom, during that 2,000 year long exile, is not just going to be the Sheker of Edom, it's going to be the Sheker of Edom that presents itself as Emet. That lies and tells you that it's the truth. And we tracked it throughout. That one of the first faces of Edom after its Roman face, or during its Roman phase, it takes on the religious identity of Christianity. Christianity, which is the first religion to walk onto the stage of history and not say, we are X, Y, or Z, and you're wrong, but rather, what does Christianity claim? We are you. We are the Jews. Again, the Rasha claiming to be the Tzaddik, something to claim that it's something that it's not. Both in terms of claiming that it's Klal Yisrael, but also the internal Sheker that we talked about there as well. The fact that some of the most basic premises, certainly that are touted by Christianity, is love and peace and turning the other cheek. And they spilled more blood, specifically Jewish blood, throughout world history than any other nation. The violence and the horror that was spread in the name of Christianity, specifically against the Jews, like there was with no other nation. And then we move on, and Edom sheds that religious identity and takes on the form of, and it's in the current stage in the exile that we're in, of the modern Western world. The modern Western world is very clearly the dominant military force, is very clearly the dominant cultural force, the dominant language. We're still living within the reality of the Galut of Edom, and the context of that is the modern Western world. And we talked about, again, the deep issues within that context of a sheker that presents itself as emet, that undermines the emet. We talked about issues that we're enmeshed in every day in current events in our daily lives. We talked about issues of postmodernism, which I looked up since last time, to get a definition, a clear definition, which only supports what we talked about. Postmodernism, which claims that there is no objective truth, only subjective truth. It's a system that's defined as, and I quote from Wikipedia, which since in my time was not great, but in you can all look into it, but in its current form, where people really do review and comment and change, and it's not saying that it's the answer, but in lieu of reading an entire book on what postmodernism is and trying to figure out what it is and then share it with you, I took the basic quote for the way it presents postmodernism, that it defined it as a rejection of grand narratives, there goes our Flemish class, a rejection of grand narratives, ideologies, and various tenets of universalism, including objective notions of reason, human nature, social progress, moral universalism, absolute truth, and objective reality. If you take away all the words in the middle there, rejection of absolute truth and objective reality. Think about that. Again, you have Esav not only embodying Sheker, but claiming that it is literally holding the Emet, and that things like absolute truth and objective reality are Sheker. It's pretty wild, yeah. We gave examples of how this manifests in so many other areas, and it's all areas of the modern Western world, because if it's a reflection of Esav, then it has to be a reflection of this reality. But we gave some examples that now, in just the last year, we've seen the rise of the term alternative facts, denying the concept of objective truth and creating a framework and a term for presenting anything as truth that one finds suitable, even if it defies the objective reality. We've seen with that the rise of a national discussion of what truth is. And again, I'm not taking sides here if you're somebody who's involved in this conversation of these types of issues. Because in that arena, that with all forms of media claiming to bear the flag of truth and to be the one to present objective truth, while all of them are mired in poisonous agendas that are laced with sheker throughout the truth that they claim to present. And I've yet to see anybody who has exempted themselves from that. Everybody claims that the opposite side is wrong, and it might be that there are some sides which may be more admirable or maybe more preferable, and that's going to depend on your political leanings or your personal leanings. But I've only seen across the board that all of those sides are laced with agendas in a way that they're presenting truth that is totally tainted by the agendas that come from a personal bias. We talked about in the modern Western world the Western industrial food system, which is a system that claims to promote health, and it has created the most unhealthy nation in the world. It produces literally fictional foods with health claims that are neither healthy nor food that is actually food at all. And we discussed the idolatry of the modern world, the idols who we look up to in all forms of entertainment. As is the nature of Edom, we put on a pedestal those whose entire lives and their very livelihood is literally to pretend to be someone else. Their success in life is determined to the extent that they can be Esau, that they can pretend to be someone else. And we even discussed the issues literally of the day. How in front of our eyes we're watching the disillusionment of the world around us as the sheker of some of those idols comes forth, showing just how ugly their internal world is and how inconsistent it is with how they present themselves to the outside world. One only need look at the newspapers of the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as more and more of these stories come out. At the end of the last year, and this will wrap up our recap so we can jump into new layers, but we're going to come back to all of these points, literally all of these points as we go through our year today. At the end of the last year, we saw Psukim and Gemarot that made it clear that when it comes to Yaakov and Esav, when it comes to Klal Yisrael and Edom, only one can be in power at a time. Since there are two entities claiming to be Emet, both of them are claiming to be the Emet, only one truth can rule the world at a time. If the Sheker of Edom is the Emet of the day, then the Emet of Klal Yisrael, the ultimate truth, is going to be in a state of Korban. And in Yirtz Hashem, when the Emet of Yaakov, when the ultimate and absolute truth that Klal Yisrael bears is recognized for what it is, then the Sheker of Esav and Edom will fall, and we will finally see the Malchut of Klal Yisrael rise, Bezrat Hashem, at the end of days. So ended last year, with the same meaning. Good. So now let's take all of this one step deeper. Esav presents himself as somebody else. Esav, the individual, tries to present himself as the tzaddik, tries to basically present himself as Yaakov. However, it's really a facade covering up that he's a rasha. Basically, by Esav, his entire existence draws from taking somebody else's place in the world. From trying to pretend to be somebody else. And let's think about this for a second, in terms of Edom, Esav, and we're going to be talking about so many of its manifestations, and it's so critical, it's such a deep, deeply profound struggle of the modern world. Where does this need to copy somebody else come from? Where does the need, bichlal, to copy someone else come from? Where does it stem from inside?
Not being like okay with who you are as like a real person.
Good, say it a little bit stronger.
Not being okay with yourself. Jealousy.
We're going to get to jealousy soon. Good. Where does jealousy come from? What do you feel? Where does insecurity come from? What do you feel?
Dissatisfaction.
All of this comes from one place. You feel a lack. All of what you said are manifestations of that. But I feel like I'm lacking something. I feel an internal emptiness. Right? That's where jealousy is going to come from. I want to fill that. I think I want what you have. I feel like I'm lacking something. I'm insecure. I don't feel like I have something. I feel empty. I feel like I'm missing something. You were all talking about manifestations, expressions of that. But it all comes from a sense of internal emptiness. Anybody who in himself is filled with content, anybody who has their own identity, their own grasp of real truth, has no need to be somebody else. It's my own emptiness and the aspect of lack of content inside of myself that brings me the need to fill it up with something else. If I can't fill it up with my own being, with my own self, with my own sense of self. So I choose something else, somebody else, some other identity to put into me. What were you going to say?
An internal lacking also fuel like the path of like tov and good, like desire for knowledge, desire like closeness to Hashem and whatnot, or is it a different kind of thing?
I would claim it's a little bit different. We may get into it a little bit more on Wednesday. We may. But I would claim that it is a little bit different. Because one is an MS of a self-recognition that I am a certain way and I have a room to grow. And the other one is a sheker of saying, no, I am complete. And if I pretend that I'm X, Y, and Z, then I will fake that completion. So I guess at the core, what it could go in two different directions, which is what we may talk about on Wednesday. It could go in two different directions. But it's a very different expression. Very, very different expression, at the very least. When we think about it as such, that this need to copy, this need to pretend to be somebody else that starts with Esav, who feels the need to pretend to be the tzaddik, to trick his father into thinking that he's as good as he is, which he's not. if we're claiming that's where the source of the Sheker of Esav comes from, then that's also going to follow through in all of Esav's manifestations throughout history as well. So let's go. Yeah, first.
Well, it just makes sense because when Yaakov is supposed to be born first,
that gets tricky, and understanding what was going on with Yaakov himself pretending to be Esav, and that's the way that he was able to take the brachot, it gets complicated. That's again, I keep saying Wednesday because I'm deciding whether or not to go to add a shiur on Wednesday to address these topics or not. But there's a lot to unpack there. But let's take Edom in terms of how he manifests throughout history. What's our first manifestation of Edom? In the form of, taking on the guise of Christianity. You look at the way that Christianity presents itself, one of the basic ways it presents itself is, it almost validates its lack of content. Drop all of the mitzvot. Drop all of that content. And yet presenting itself as being the bearer of truth, but without anything inside of that. There's a very powerful speaker who's in Eretz Yisrael. He spoke in, when I was in yeshiva, he used to come every single year. I don't know if he goes to the seminary circuit also. Rav Asher Wade. I don't know if he goes around in the cloud. Rav Asher Wade. I'm sure that you can find a video of him online or recorded shiur of his online. He gives the same presentation all the time. He was born not Jewish, and he became a minister. And he was giving sermons as a minister every single Sunday. And he talks about what changed his life was that he kept on getting up every single week, week after week, week after week, and saying, be better people, be kind, be wonderful, be sweet, spread peace, spread love. He kept on saying the same things again and again. And he talks about how somebody in his congregation, I don't know whatever you call it, somebody in his congregation kept on coming up and saying, okay, but how do I do that? And how that person continuing to badger him led him down a dark path of realizing that he was not convinced that his religious framework actually had any answers. And when he realized the emptiness, the fact that it was a facade, claiming that these things were important, but actually not providing any actual meaningful framework beneath the surface, he went back to what became before the New Testament. Do you know what he found? He found an Old Testament, right? He found the Chumash. He found Tanakh, a book which presented halachot. That's the way he talks about it. I sat in his presentation. This was years ago, but I still remember. Which presents, doesn't just present morals. It doesn't just present values. That also says you have to do this and you have to do that. And it gives whole parshas, like Parshat Mishpatim, like Parshat Ki Tetze, like Parshat Kedoshim. Parshas that are literally whole parshas where every other pasuk is a mitzvah. Details of how you do it, and it led him down a path to convert and become a rabbi and become somebody who now teaches Torah. It's an extreme example, but that's where he felt it came from. That's where he expressed that it came from. Somebody who literally came from the other side. When we get to the modern Western worlds, I don't know much from Christianity. When it comes to the modern Western world, which we have all grown up in, when you start to isolate the fact that the Sheker of the modern world, the Western world, emanates from a place of emptiness, that starts to hit very close to home. Right? You think about all the things that we've been talking about. Some of the things we haven't been talking about, things that we talked about much earlier by Avraham Avinu. That so much of the pain and the discomfort and the challenge of the modern world, I know this speaking from students, and you know this simply from doing a little reading into the research, comes from a deep, deep sense of emptiness in this day and age, yeah?
I'm a big, just to add to your point, I'm a big fan of the magazine Atlantic, and Atlantic is not a psychology magazine, it's mostly politics, and I can't say how many times I've read an article, and somehow it came up that America's number one problem is that people feel loneliness.
Yes.
And the fact that that's coming up over and over again in a political magazine, and that's loneliness is a sense of empty.
So let's take that and escalate it. That what's frightening about the day and age, that one of the many things that's frightening about the day and age that we live in, and every age has its challenges, and every age thinks that it's the worst, you know, has the worst set of problems that it has, though I believe it's true too. You look at a society where we've never, ever been more connected than we have ever been in the past. We've never had more easy access to talk to whoever we want, whenever we want, about whatever we want. We are glued to these small little machines that we carry in our pockets 24/7, whether it's texting, WhatsApping, Facebook messaging, FaceTiming, right? We're connected to these things which are connecting us to other people. And yet, we feel more lonely than we've ever felt. How is that possible? How could it be that the world presents itself as one way, and yet it's the exact opposite? That is Esav. Esav makes a bold claim that things are one way, and it's the exact opposite at its core. I've spoken about this before, and I'm sorry to pick on it, but I'm going to pick on Facebook again. You think about what Facebook is. Facebook is one of the biggest checkers that there is. It's so dangerous. It's so dangerous. Even in its name, it's a checker. In Judaism, how do you say face? Panim. What's, if you take the nikud and you switch the nikud of panim, what word do you get? Pnim. What does pnim mean?
Inside.
My inside. Why would Judaism, why would Torah, why would Lashon HaKodesh give the name, same word for your face and for your inside, which should be the opposite? Why? Because we're Klal Yisrael, because we're Yaakov, because we're Achad Bepeh Achad Belev. Because we're supposed to be the same. We're supposed to be that our entire expression to the external world is a reflection of our internal reality. You look at something like the sheker of what Facebook is. So much of the obsession with Facebook is, how do I present myself to the world? What identity do I create for myself? How do I look like I'm always happy? How do I look like I'm always having the best time? How do I always look like I have a ton of friends? How do I make sure that my friend count goes up into the millions even though I don't talk to anybody ever? It's a tremendous distortion. It's a huge problem, and it's a part of what causes that emptiness. It's this fight to get more Facebook friends and more Facebook friends and more Facebook friends. And we spend so many time adding Facebook friends that we don't spend time actually cultivating any friendships. We spend so much time making sure that we take all of the right selfies to post on Facebook to show everyone they're having a great time that we don't even remember where we went. We live behind the camera. We live behind the machine. That again, we present things to the world one way that's the exact opposite of who we are and how we feel. That we feel that deep sense of emptiness. The desire, we spoke about this, I remember it was here in Shir Kali, in the context of Lechachan Avraham Avinu. The desire in this day and age to present oneself as being an individual. How do I look like an individual? That's how we ask it. Not how I be an individual. How do I look like an individual? And so we try to find the way to catch this new trend in clothing, or this new trend and this new filter with the camera, or this new angle, or this new space, or this new way. All to create this facade of being totally unique, totally counterculture. Counterculture is culture now. Counterculture is in. Right? If you have not yet created a brand new term to define your identity, then you're living in the past. Because you're part of the social construct and you haven't defined your own identity for yourself yet with some new grandiose term that doesn't mean anything. It's the world we live in. It's a world where we present ourselves one way. We're trained to present ourselves one way. And again, I speak to students day in and day out. And there's that feeling of complete and total emptiness. Because we're mirroring the world of Esav instead of the world of Yaakov. Let's move into some of the topics that we talked about in the modern world. We talked about issues of alternative facts in the media. Same thing. We have more access to more news outlets, to more up-to-date ability to receive information than we've ever had before. And yet, the media is less reliable than it's ever been. How is that possible? Because I want to grab you with a headline that shows that I have the scoop. I have the facts. I've got it down. And I haven't given it the time to figure that out. The old newspaper men and women of yesteryear don't exist anymore because you don't have time to fact check. You don't have time to validate sources. Because if you're posting on Facebook or on a blog 6 hours after the last 200 people, it's because you're slow, not because you're thorough. Not because it's truth, but because you have no access to the truth. And why have quicker access to the truth? Think about it. Think about that as the concept of how we consume truth in the media and the news. Food. Come back to food again. It's not just that food that's unhealthy puts health claims on it. Our food that claims to be nutritious is actually nutrient deficient. If you go down that rabbit hole and start to investigate the industrialized food system, almost all of our food that comes in boxes, almost, not identifying any food in particular, but almost all of our food that comes prepackaged in boxes are clever reorganizations of corn. And not just of corn, I'm not demonizing corn. Corn is wonderful. Corn is very healthy. Corn is good. The corn that we're growing, the type 2 corn that we're growing, that is actually inedible and nutrient deficient, but is incredibly useful to create all kinds of chemicals that can put foods together, it's nutrient deficient. And so again, even our food, when we walk through the supermarket, what does it do? It screams, I am healthy. I've got omega-3s, and I've got antioxidants, and I've got this, and I've got that, and I'm screaming at us from the boxes. Don't bother eating the fruit and the vegetables. They're not making any bold food claims. I have the truth. I have the actual health. And yet we're the unhealthiest nation in the world. We're entirely nutrient deficient. Don't get me started on actors and actresses in the entertainment world. Right? I think to me what encapsulated the best, I think I might have mentioned to some of you after Shir last time, that there was somebody who was very, very high up in a movie production company. If I said the name, you would know exactly what it is because it's, huge. And at one point over the last few years, there was an issue and a lot of their secrets were shared on the entirety of the internet. A lot got out. Some of you even know what we're talking about because it was a big story for an entire summer. And one of the people was at the forefront of that, so she fell hard. And during that time, during an interview, I guess she had no filter at that point because once all of her personal dealings had now been shared with the entirety of the world, why bother having a filter? And there was one comment, one line of hers that I saw that in an article that really hit me when I saw it. I was like, wow, this is what we're talking about. Where she, live on a talk show, said, I've been working with actors and actresses my entire life, and I'll tell you that they're all bottomless pits of need. That's a direct quote. She defined them. And we look at these people who we think in our minds have everything. Right? They have everything. They're rich. They're famous. They're, in our words, and again, we're now being conscientious of the words that we're using, they are idolized by millions. They literally have more love thrown at them than anybody experiences in an entire lifetime. And yet, they have some of the deepest senses of emptiness of anybody in the world. It's the entire way that this world functions. We're living in a time now as everything becomes exposed and everything comes up. I mean, I hate to say it, and it's hard to say. Again, maybe it's because I don't have a filter at this particular moment in time. But the issues of the day that we're talking about in people around your age and younger, depression, loneliness, suicidal tendencies, right? These are the things that we're talking about, right? This is what we've been talking about behind closed doors, and we're more and more now talking them in front of, in open spaces, or in safe spaces, either way, but we're talking about them now suddenly. Where does that come from? This depth of a sense of loneliness. It's because we're part of a world where if we are living up to the standards of the world that we live in, to the world of Esav, If that's our goal, then we will successfully look great and come off beautifully and feel totally alone and totally empty. That's the world of Esav. And that's the desire within Esav and Edom to try to copy somebody else. That's where it comes from. Where a box of nutritionless food feels the need to say, I'm packed with nutrients. Where an actor has to say to the world, I couldn't be more happy. This was the best experience of my life working on this movie, and the actor was amazing, and the director was amazing, and my fellow actors and actresses were the best I've ever worked with. I've never seen anybody get up and say, wow, that director was rough. Ever heard that before from an actor and actress? Ever complain about working with another actor or actress on set? Ever? Rarely. Rarely. And when they do, you note it because they become a leper, right? They become totally excommunicated from the community. You're not allowed to talk like that. You're not allowed to actually talk about what things are like, right? Pretending to be somebody else, pretending to be something else. Where retractions are given days or weeks later in small paragraphs on the bottom. Never in top page above the full columns. We're sorry we reported this wrong. Because we have to keep pumping out that we own the truth. Postmodernism having the chutzpah to say that there is no truth. And therefore I am truth. Because everything is truth. Which doesn't even make sense. Going all the way back and all the way forward. It's that emptiness which creates the desire to present oneself as having the answers. Which leads us to the last piece that I want to talk about for today. Which is an aspect of Esav. I was trying to figure out where to put it in. I felt like this was the best place to put it in. An aspect of Esav, which should be the one that we wanted to talk about first, but I thought it would actually be more impactful if we talked about it last. Drawing from our paradigms, our narrative, because we believe in narratives, our narrative in Chumash. When Avraham gave birth to Yishmael and to Yitzchak, what was Yishmael and what was Yitzchak in comparison to Avraham? How did that process work? What was Avraham? What was Yishmael? Extreme or negative elements, unbalanced elements of chesed, so extreme that they needed to be extracted from the system, which allowed Yitzchak to be produced, Yitzchak being the embodiment of. Now Yitzchak has two children, Esav and Yaakov. What then is Esav going to be? If we follow our paradigm through, he's going to be the negative, unbalanced, extreme expressions of Gvura. Which then allows for Yaakov to produce the next Midah, the Midah of Tiferet, the Midah of Emet, a Midah that we'll talk about much more next semester when we start going through Parshat Vayitzeh. We'll get more into the individual that is Yaakov and his story and what that means and the unfolding of the Midah of Tiferet, the unfolding of the Midah of Emet. But focusing on Esav as we've been doing, he's going to be the negative, the embodiment of the negative and unbalanced and extreme elements of Gvura. How have we defined Gvura in the past? What is Gvura? The tendency of anything to, what did you say? To remain within one's boundaries. What does it mean to have the negative, extreme, unbalanced reality of Gvura? So the easy way of understanding it is to say, okay, I'm staying within myself, totally isolating myself from the world. And that definitely is a negative aspect of Gvura. Cutting oneself off from the world, not allowing oneself to connect. But the flip side of it is exactly what we're talking about. Which is, I see myself a certain way. I have defined myself a certain way. And I am the way that one is supposed to be. And if you are not like me, then instead of accepting you as being able to be different from me, I'm going to try to eradicate you as being something which exists different than my own internal world. Since you can't be subsumed into my internal world, into my internal perspective, my internal agenda, you exist independently, you exist differently, then I'm going to wipe you out. And that's why negative expressions of Gvura, extreme unbalanced Gvura, are often associated with Ka'as, anger, Kin'ah, jealousy, Sin'ah, hatred. Because if you're not like me, if you challenge anything other than what I see within my own internal world, I hate you. If you challenge that, I'm jealous of you. I want what you have. It should exist within me, not within you. And I'm angry that the world doesn't reflect the way that I imagine it should be. That's where anger comes from. I thought things were going to go a certain way, and things didn't go the way I thought they were going to go. And I get angry because the world didn't match up with my perception of the way the world should be. I'm jealous because the reality is not up with what I think I deserve. And I hate that which is different than myself. And if what we're saying is true, that should be very dangerous. Because if the internal reality of Esav is truly empty, then it's going to lash out the moment that it sees content, truth, that challenges its falsehood. It's going to produce a world where truth can't be found. Because the second the truth rears its head, Esav is going to be jealous of it, is going to hate it, is going to be furious with it, and is going to try to destroy it. And we see that time and again, whether you go back to Christianity. Jews don't look to convert. We don't proselytize. Christianity certainly is always looking to convert. Why would they be looking to convert? Because they're an extreme of Gvura. Because you're either like me, or you have no salvation. Or in my paradigm, there's no hope for you. There is no life for you. There is no hope for you. And if even that doesn't work, if the threat of Gehenna doesn't work, then I'm going to send out my soldiers and have them execute you. And that's what we've experienced under ages of living under Christianity. You come to the Western world, which is now presenting itself in many ways. You look at aspects of the postmodern world, aspects of the liberal elements within the world. One of the definitions, one of the words associated with postmodernism was the concept of pluralism, where we accept everyone. Except pluralism doesn't accept everyone. It accepts everyone who accepts everyone, because I accept everyone. But if you have any aspect of exclusivity, then you're anti my worldview of inclusivity, and I'm going to exclude you, which is the irony and the sheker of pluralism. And they look to wipe it out, and they hate it. If you've ever been in an environment where you've been the odd one out in a pluralistic environment, and those of you who know what I'm talking about, where you've been the odd one out in a pluralistic environment, you're going to be the one that's hated. You're going to be the one that's tortured. You're going to be the one that's going to be tried to be snuffed out. Even though it goes against the very premises of pluralism itself. You look at the way that the media is being portrayed in this day and age. And if one perceives the media as being biased, there is going to be an endless barrage of trying to convince the world that news is fake. And it's not going to stop. And again, I'm not choosing a political side of the aisle. Because on the flip side, you're going to have strong conservative views and vantage points and voices. And they're going to talk about the fact how the liberals are taking over the world. And they're going to respond with anger and hatred. And you're going to see within the same America the rise of white supremacy at the same time that you're seeing a convalescence of liberalism. Both sides rising up and neither giving space to the other because they're both extreme. They're both, whether they know it or not, expressions of the extremes of Aesop. Not being able to see the other. If you have, and I wish it upon none of you, if you've had the unfortunate experience of being on internet message boards and comment sections, the anger and the venom and the disgust and the vitriol that you see being promoted there, of if anybody comes and sees something that doesn't jive with my worldview, there's no filter anymore. The internet's created a platform for me to literally say whatever I want in the most disgusting way possible. Show Aesop's true face of hate, of anger, on both sides of the aisle. Conservative media, liberal media. Conservative politics, liberal politics. Where the more you watch, the more you see of it, you see liberals who love everyone hating conservatives. You see more and more the talk of ripping down the white male-dominated world. And you see white supremacists stand up and fight back and say, we don't want to be wiped out. And yet seeing that in the form of white supremacy. And both literally looking to wipe out the other. No one accepting the other. No one giving space to the other. No one having dialogue with the other. Because there's no truth in either one. Because they're both reflections of Aesop. Whether it's postmodernism, which is looking to wipe out any sense of truly being an individual instead of promoting false individuality, or whether it's conservatism that's literally an extension of Nazism and actually trying to wipe everybody out. Two sides of the same coin. They share much more in common than they don't, which is the scariest part of all. They share an internal emptiness. And they share an expression of a negativity of Gvura. Food, the industrialized food system. Like I said, do your research, look into it. Within the cogs of our governmental system, they've managed to put safeguards in place that you can't speak negatively about most bad foods. You could be fined, imprisoned. It sounds crazy. So it's easy to dismiss. Look into it. Look into veggie libel laws. Look into what happened when Oprah Winfrey said, I will never eat a burger again, and how many millions of dollars it cost her to prove that she wasn't at fault for disparaging the food industry. Look into these things. Respond with anger, with hate, with suppression of truth. You look into the fact that, again, we're seeing the exposure of the true face of certain elements of the entertainment world, and the fact that the entirety of the entertainment world was complicit in pushing down and not talking about this reality for so long. And now finally certain things are coming to surface. Finally certain things are starting to come out. The fear that's involved there, because of the anger and the negativity that would be expressed to those individuals who would dare to challenge the paradigms. That's the negativity of Gvura. That's extreme Gvura. And again, I think it's something which those of us who are engaged with the internet and with the online world, and it starts to seep into conversations as well, because the internet is starting to shape how we look at the world. And texting and Facebook messaging and WhatsApping is starting to mistrain us how to communicate. But certainly if you're looking online, and again, as the online world begins to more and more penetrate and define, the virtual reality becomes to define the reality, which is what's so frightening. The anger, the hatred, the sense of emptiness that manifests itself in lashing out at the other. That's the Esav that we're coming to combat. Let's summarize and wrap up. We live in an incredibly challenging time. Every time Esav takes on a new face, it becomes even more confusing. While we lost so many Jews to Christianity, both from Christianity killing them or Christianity converting them. Either way, we knew that we were being executed or we knew that we were being converted. The danger of the modern world is that the modern Western world, we don't realize what we're living in. We don't see the Sheker. We don't know that we're in a war. We don't know that we have an ultimate truth, and we no longer remember that our ultimate absolute truth is different than the truth that the world presents to us, the modern Western world presents to us. We've let Esav convince us that Esav and Yaakov are the same. And because of that, the ramifications of that are the loss of truth, the loss of health, the loss of identity, the loss of self-fulfillment, an impoverished sense of self, physically, emotionally, spiritually, an increase in depression, an increase in suicidal tendencies, an increase in anxiety, an increase in eating disorders, an increase in general unhappiness, an increase in the lack of marital satisfaction. Because we don't know who we are, and we have no connection to absolute truth. When one is up, the other is down. And to the extent that one is up, the other one is down. This could be the most depressing shiur in the world. Certainly the most depressing shiur of the semester. I would attempt to leave it off on a positive note. To quote one of my mentors, incredible individual, Dr. David Pelkovitz, many of you probably have heard of or know or heard him speak. One of my favorite lines of his that he uses all the time is that the first stage to change, to name the monster, is to conquer it. When you don't know what it is that you're fighting, you can't fight it. You're swinging in the dark. To name the monster is to conquer it. And what I wanted to do today was, even though we didn't see so many sources inside, and we didn't cover ground in that way, in some ways this was more important than anything that we could have seen inside of the text. And it all emanates from the text anyway. Because today we named the monster. Today we named emptiness, loneliness, anger, hatred, jealousy. We name the places that they come from, the places that they manifest, what it is that we're struggling with. And now our goal is to conquer it. We are living in the final selection of history. Maaseh Avot Siman LaBanim. If the last selection was between Esav and Yaakov, the final selection is between B'nai Yisrael and Edom's manifestation in the modern world. We need to reclaim truth. We need to reclaim it for ourselves internally, build ourselves up as Anshei Emet, like Yaakov was the Ish Emet, then Emet LiYaakov. We need to reclaim actual truth, actual absolute ultimate truth. Internalize it, live it, and share it. We need to challenge Sheker. We need to subvert Sheker. Talked about last time how Emmet has legs to stand on and Sheker doesn't. We need to push Sheker and show the world that it'll topple so quickly if we just give it a shove. But we can only do that if we find Emmet first. And to a certain extent, even within the Jewish world, we've stopped seeking truth. We accept everything that we hear. We accept every shir that we hear online. It doesn't matter who it came from. We accept every drasha that we hear in every shul. It doesn't matter who said it and whether there are sources to back it up or not. We accept so many things. We need to start questioning again. Digging for truth. I need to know, is this true? Like, again, it's the same conversation we had by Avram Avinu. We have to reignite that Avram side, that desperate seeking of truth. Because when we find that truth, then the Sheker will fall. Then Esav and Edom will fall. Then we can finally have the seesaw switch to the opposite side. And we can see the rise of Malchut Yisrael. Quote the same pasuk to end off on that we quoted last time as our last pasuk. That we say every day, Pasukei Dezimra. Said in Sefer Ovadia. Sefer Ovadia, where the whole Sefer is one perek long. We just read it last Shabbos. The whole Sefer is one perek long. The Nevuah is one perek long. And it's all about the realities of the struggle with Edom. And you know who Ovadia was? Not unlike Rav Asher Wade. He was an Edomi who saw the Emet in Klal Yisrael. Converted, reached the heights of Nevuah. And because he was able to see from the outside in, because he found that truth and knew the Sheker of where it came from, he was Zoche to be given the Nevuah of what Esav and Edom is really about. And to be able to end off as we will with Ba'alu Moshi'im Bahar Tzion Lishpotat Har Esav, that at the end of days the Saviors will be able to go up on Har Tzion and be able to finally judge Har Esav, to be able to reveal it for the Sheker it is. And then again when it falls, we will finally see Ba'ya Hashem Lucha, we'll be able to see the Malchus of Hashem rise in the Malchut of Mashiach. B'ezrat Hashem, Mihira B'yaminu.